In this episode of Movie Mars, we're going to talk about John Wick and Birdman. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, D as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. You love the movies, this show is for you. So here you are, still on the same Friday night as we were a couple of podcasts ago, recording.
The sleepy hour has arrived.
Movies back to back to back.
From my eyes.
Yeah, Rashmi's eyelids are starting to drop. I must admit, I'm having a hard time staying awake. Hopefully you won't, while listening to this podcast. I apologise, movies isn't meant to send you to sleep, even though we might be falling asleep as we go through it. So, yes, I do want to ask you about your Fitbit.
Yes.
Tell me about your Fitbit.
So my Fitbit is this little device you wear, as everybody knows, on your wrist, and it tracks.
Looks like some cool piece of jewellery.
Yeah, I wish it was made from a better material, but anyway, it's a little neoprene-ish. But anyway, it has a little electronic thingamajig in the middle that you can charge once a week, and it essentially tracks all movements that you make, and it counts the number of steps you took during the day, and you can set goals where it reminds you and says you have only 1,000 more steps to go today, you know, based on how you've done.
And why does the message come?
There's an app. So there's an app. So you can sync it either with your app on your smartphone or on your computer. It tracks how many minutes you've been active. Like if you've gone running or if you've been working out, it tracks. And it based on your movement, it recommends how many calories, you know, you can expend that day. And the best part of all is it keeps track of your night sleeping patterns based on your movement.
That, to me, is the interesting bit.
Which is really good because every day you can see you tell it when you went to sleep and when you woke up. And then it'll show little bars when you had activity during the night. So it can tell you when you were in your deep sleep, you know, what times you were, you know, moving around more. And that to me has been really tremendous. And I must say the number of steps, the reminders that keep saying, you know, oh, you have only 500 more steps to meet your 10,000 steps goal is really good because it kind of pushes you to just, you know, when you were thinking of just lying down, it pushes you to go out and walk or
and
run.
The sleepy thing is interesting given you are mostly sleeping at your own house.
Yeah, but yes, given yes. So if I slept in somebody else's house,
answer that question.
If I slept in somebody else's house, it would look very different. There would be more activity. That didn't come out right. Moving on.
That was a callback to our last podcast where Yassi made the bold statement that he doesn't like to sleep in anyone else's bed.
Yes.
But we're not that kind of a show.
But no, just very quickly. So yes, you talk with your hands a lot. Is that counting steps? Because a wrist-worn pedometer is one that I never tried. I would never quite believe. I would just stand there shaking my fist all day just to get steps up.
I don't know how it works. I should try banging my hand against the table and see if that counts as steps. I don't know how it exactly works.
I guess that's
works.
Missing the point.
Yeah, and you can also buy one which you don't wear in your hand. It's just a little tracking device like a pedometer.
Clip, yeah. Right.
Which you always end up losing inevitably.
Correct.
Well, I'm holding out for the Apple Watch, but we'll have a podcast about that nearer the time it comes out.
Yes.
All right, two movies to talk about this week, John Wick and Birdman.
Neither of probably you ever needed a Fitbit.
No, absolutely. Correct. Right.
So Birdman, or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance, is a story about a washed-up actor who once played an iconic superhero, and he must overcome his ego and family trouble as he mounts a Broadway play in a bid to reclaim his past glory. That's, I think, all I want to say about the movie. I think the less said, the better. This is directed by Alejandro González Iñárritu, and it's written by Alejandro González Iñárritu, Nicolas Giacobon, and Armando Bol. And we were lucky enough to meet Armando and have a nice chat to him about his movie The Last Elvis, which we watched at LA Film Festival 2 years ago, and a rather interesting story about Javier Bardem,
yes,
which we won't say on the air for fear of libel.
Right.
It's all right. Javier Bardem's an ass. I think everyone knows that.
Yeah.
Yes, you've got a first-hand account.
Yes. From the time when he also co-wrote Beautiful, which was also directed by Alfonso Iñárritu.
Very nice man. Yes. Very nice man. But that didn't have any bias on our movie review.
Correct.
I'm saying that now, Yazdi, and speaking for you as well. And you, Joe. So this stars Michael Keaton, Zach Galifianakis, Ed Norton, Emma Stone, Naomi Watts, and Andrea Riseborough, amongst many others. So, Joe, why don't you go first on this one? I'm dying to hear what you both thought about this one. And especially Joe, because I don't know if this is his type of movie, so I'm interested.
You got that right. There was nothing here for me. This movie was technically very, very accomplished. There were so many ways that I looked at this movie and admired it. I admired the performances. I admired the direction. I admired the way it was put together so that it all looked like one single take. But couldn't relate to any of it. I didn't find the plot interesting. I didn't find the characters interesting. I had a hard time staying awake because it seemed all so pointless to me. So as much as I can see why there is a lot of admiration for this movie at a technical level, this just was not for me. Sorry, I didn't like this one.
Yazdi.
So there's no question about it. This movie is an experiment. In every sense of the word, technically, in terms of the script, in terms of the structure of it. But what a glorious experiment it is. And the movie is pretentious like ass. I mean, it's so pretentious. It's about, you know, look at the title of the movie. Okay, Birdman or The Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance. But give me something like this, something flawed and pretentious and, you know, and different rather than the kind of safe and generic stuff that gets jammed down our throats all the time. I love this movie.
Yes, I'm with you. This is a brilliant, different movie that shouldn't work. But the combination of a great story, witty dialogue, and phenomenal acting from every single person in this movie makes this film a joy to watch. I loved this movie. Hands down, one of my favorite movies of the year so far. Which, you know, I say about every movie that I love in every podcast.
But I'm surprised you said that you were bored by it, because at about the 15-minute mark, the thing that came to my mind was that this movie is the equivalent of people jumping off cliffs. These actors are just jumping off without a parachute. What they're doing is so incredibly brave. And this is what acting should be. It should not be these quick cuts. You know, the movie is gloriously long takes. I mean, some of them go like 15, 20 minutes, and it's the orchestration and just the choreography of it. That alone was like wowing me minute by minute.
But it was a gimmick. Everything about this movie, the performances, the editing, this long take, everything about this movie was, you call it an experiment, and yes, it was an experiment, but for me, it came across as a gimmick. It came across as these actors doing very edgy things as actors. I mean, you know, very, very bold performances, but ultimately just seemed so pointless. And you had this thing with, like, the Emma Stone character where her eyes are, like, CG enhanced. Like, her eyes were like teacups at one point in the movie.
But that's how she is.
there was a digital enhancement going on here. There was. They did not look normal. And this is the kind of playful experimentation that was abundant in this movie. But to me, I couldn't latch on to any of it. I was like, oh, he's making Emma Stone's eyes look a little bit bigger than they normally are to emphasize this moment in the movie where she's getting, like, you know, heated and
googly-eyed. You
know. But it was just annoying. I looked at it and I was like, well, what's the point of that? Does that augment her acting? Does that augment the scene? No, it doesn't.
I didn't even realize it. Did you?
No, things like the whole single take thing.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of being this kind of sense of we're seeing these events play out in real time in front of us, I would just kept looking for how they're going to do the next cut. I'm like, let's see how they transition from this scene to the next. So instead of it being immersive for me, it ended up being this distraction where I'm like looking at the technical side of the movie thinking, well, okay, so we're going to go from here to there. And oh, look, they're cunningly just panning across to that wall. And it holds for 1 second too long so that it can seamlessly transition to that. And so I was distracted by all of this gunk in the movie that, again, ultimately made the thing unsatisfying for me.
So, Joe, where this, I think the brilliance of this movie came in everything you just said is like, this is like watching that incredible improvisation game called Follow the Leaver. And I think for you, what ended up being gimmicky left me marveling at the screenplay and the mechanics of the screenplay. Because in Follow the Leaver, as we've all done, you know, you basically follow the story of the person who leaves the stage to the next scene. And it's not always easy to bring it back. We all know that because we've done that. This was done pretty flawlessly, I think. For me, I think what worked well and what elevated the movie is, in my mind, it's not dissimilar in some ways. And we spoke about Black Swan in a recent podcast. Yeah. It wasn't dissimilar to Black Swan because you never really know what's psychosis, what's really happening, or what's an enhanced form of reality. And I think that's the beauty of the movie, because really what it shows you is the complexity of this character played by Michael Keaton. And again, this is acting at its very best. I think it's a really clever narrative about the world we're living in regarding celebrity and social media. And it all feels very meta at times because they reference a lot of pop culture that we're all living in currently. But it just works amazingly beautiful for me.
Yeah, I mean, so Alfonso González Iñárritu, I mean, what are the movies he's made before? He's made 21 Grams, he's made Babel, he's made Amores Perros. And every single one of the movies he's made so far has had the structure of disjointed stories. There are six or seven different stories which may not necessarily coalesce together. Every one of them, 21 Grams, you know, Amores Perros, as well as Babel. And I think he kind of flipped over to the other side where he said, I've always been making these fractured stories. How about I make a story where the entire movie is made to look like a single, you know, extended take? And, you know, the only other, I mean, there was a Russian movie made a few years ago called, there was a British movie made a long time ago called The Russian Ark, which truly was a single take. There was no gimmicks used. And then I think the only other person, Hitchcock, did 49 Steps. Which was again a movie made to seem like it was a single take. So I think it's more than, I know it's a gimmick, but I think it's something incredibly adventurous to do and brave to do and say, let me try to say it within the confines of making it seem like it was a single take. And I think the movie is not trying to have a very formal story. I think it's a character study of a person who's coming undone. And this person, right from the very first setting, you're not sure if what he's doing is what's actually happening or it's something which he's imagining. And exactly like Black Swan, which I hadn't even thought about until you brought it up, as the movie moves along, you can sense that his disassociated self is, you know, widening further and further apart from reality, where that distinction between what's real and what he imagines and he's delirious is kind of, you know, getting wider and wider apart. And I found that kind of fascinating. I loved how the movie, the director has gone on record to say that he's made these movies which have all been Oscar nominated and they've been thought of, as brilliant, but he always has this fear that somebody's going to call him out as a fake. And he's always afraid that he kind of swings between thinking he's great for having made these movies which have won so much acclaim and the realization that maybe he's fake. And I think this whole character, the lead character, kind of represents him trying to figure out. And I think all artists struggle with that if they're insecure. You know, are they really great, or is somebody just going to call them out one day for the fakes that they are?
And even the people who are calling them out, I think you had a really good dialogue about critics and what critics do and the role of critics. Fantastic.
Completely unfair how he beats up on the critic character, but so compelling. The arguments between the critic and him, like, you know, in a way, the movie is kind of justifying itself again and again with the dialogues that his character says. Like, there's this whole argument he has with the critic where, you know, but does this play have any form? Does it have any structure? All you care about is the story. But he's talking about the movie itself. He's saying, look at the form in this movie. Look at the structure of this movie. Why do you care about, you know, simple things? So I don't know. It all worked for me. And I think the movie's blessed with three incredible female performances. Yes. Just, if I had to pick a best female supporting character, I don't know if I would pick Emma Stone, if I would pick Amy Ryan, or if I would pick Andrea Riseborough.
Naomi Watts.
Naomi Watts. I mean, they're just, I don't know.
Ed Norton was the one that did it for me. I mean, yeah. I have just loved Ed Norton since Fight Club. I mean, Fight Club is one of my all-time favorite movies. To see Ed Norton again at the top of his game with that dialogue and the way he brings it. Oh my God, what? I can't wait to watch this movie again. I can't wait to put this on and watch everything frame by frame. I mean, phenomenal.
I just got a thrill because there's so many scenes in the movie where somebody opens a door, they walk out on the stage, and there's a live audience there. There's like 200 people. I don't know if you use CGI, but how the hell did they orchestrate that? I mean, how, you know, forget Michael Keaton, forget Edward Norton, forget, you know, Naomi Watts, forget Andrea Riseborough, forget all these people who are exceptional. I think the real star of the movie, as another reviewer mentioned, is the handycam operator. Whoever shot this, because, you know, the camera tracks, it comes and stops. And there's a lot of like Austin Powers kind of things going on where things are just hidden within range. The movie has a lot of scenes in dressing rooms where there are mirrors everywhere. For the life of me, I don't know how they managed to film that without actually seeing the camera. So there's a lot of look, ma, no hands kind of technical stuff going on.
Yes, I mean, the cinematography was very good. And this, the cinematographer, I think, has, you know, one of the reviews I read about this, he's kind of famous for this idea of, I don't know if he did a short movie or it's like a pop video or something.
He won the Oscar last year for Gravity. He did the cinematography for Gravity.
So that shows you how uneducated I am on that guy's work. But certainly his body of work shows his talent. And this is another movie that, again, I think, you know, really does a good job at showing what a great cinematographer he is. So, you know, again, on the technical side of things, you know, the movie is very admirable. But, you know, you spoke earlier about the character kind of having this journey where he's starting to unravel and disconnect from reality. Well, you know, for me, it started there. I mean, you know, the opening scene with Michael Keaton in the dressing room, from that moment on, I knew I wasn't going to like this movie.
Did that rub you the wrong way?
Because I'm like, what is going on here? Like, there's no explanation for it. It's just, you kind of have to sit there and accept, you know, at first you think this is a little weird, and then you're like, this is really weird. And then it's like, how is he floating? You know, and so you end up with these questions. And for me, I need answers to those things, right?
It was a Holy Motors moment for you,
right? As a watcher of the movie, I need to understand what it is that I'm seeing. And so, you know, it starts kind of at this kind of out there level, like immediately. There's no journey to kind of from, you know, the normal to the out there. There's no standard structure in this movie in terms of, you know, there's kind of some sort of inciting incident which moves on to kind
but
of.
But that's the brilliance of this movie is that it doesn't follow any of those norms. And I worry, Joe, that had this been an Aaron Sorkin film, we'd be having a very different discussion because you'd be influenced by the fact that it was an Aaron Sorkin
one take
versus
it would be better.
Someone else.
The difference is
really
it would be better.
I just like how it's so self-aware it was.
Oh, I just
Which should annoy you, and I think it annoys a lot of people.
Yes,
because it's so pretentious. But it totally worked for me. Like there's a part where I think they do the final rehearsal for the play, and then Emma Stone's on the balcony, and somebody comes and asks, "So, you know, how was it?" And she said, "This is, I wrote it down." She's saying, "It was not bad. It was weird, but kind of cool." She's talking about the movie. You know, she's saying, you know, this movie is kind of, you know, it's kind of weird, you know, it wasn't bad, but it's kind of cool. And I don't know. And then, you know, how great is the acting? I mean, there's that one scene where Emma Stone like lashes out at her father. And that's like, you know, like Virginia Madsen in Sideways. There was that one scene where, you know, at the Oscars, they're going to show that clip if she gets nominated for.
I was thinking when I saw that scene, I was like, that's the scene.
I'm like, this is the scene
in
that Emma Stone, they're going to put it if she gets nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Okay, let's wrap this on and start with Joe.
No, let's do the Joe sandwich.
Okay, Yazdi.
So again, as I at the risk of repeating myself, I love overambitious movies, as flawed as they are. And this movie is ambition to burn. It's vain, and like I said, it's pretentious and it's flawed, but it's a glorious mess. And I give me one of those any day of the year compared to all the other crap that we see every day. I think I will give this a 9 out of 10. I will.
Joe.
This is just a gimmicky, pretentious piece of very technically accomplished filmmaking. I mean, there's just not very much to latch on to here. And I think, you know, I have a hard time, you know, I'll admit to it. I mean, you know, I'm very bread and butter in terms of the way that I like my films to be constructed. And there, you know, there are those that work for me, you know, Terrence Malick occasionally, you know, does something very unconventional that resonates with me beautifully, but there's a narrative that I can grasp onto and characters that I care about. This movie from start to finish, I was just distracted by everything that was going on visually. And as a result, I was completely unable to connect with anything that was going on narratively. So it's going to be a 4 out of 10. It was too damn long. I was done with it after an hour and a half, and yet the thing insisted on running for another 40 minutes. Done. Boring. Terrible.
It's one of those holy moments.
This is a very divisive movie, yes.
This is, yeah. Okay, so my only gripe is I wish that it had ended 2 minutes early or 5 minutes early. We didn't talk about that.
How about two hours early?
We don't want to get into that.
Yeah.
It is kind of weird and it is kind of cool. No, it's really weird and it's really cool. Rush, run, heck, fly to see this movie. This is brilliant. 10 out of 10.
Really?
Phenomenal. Mind-blowingly good.
It blew my mind.
It was just one of the most innovative movies with some of the best acting. I mean, you know, I talked about acting in Fury. And Joe, I think I had the same kind of reaction that you had to this one. I understand and admired it. The acting in this movie was just something else. I mean, Michael Keaton was amazing. And Zach Galifianakis, how wonderful to see him in not a crazy role.
He
was amazing.
And all the actors are completely at the service of the story. Zach Galifianakis is never trying to be...
Nobody's showboarding.
I just think, you know, to me, this is the analogy is most movies are like actors standing on solid ground and acting and saying out their lines. This movie is like people getting on trapezes without a safety net. And while they are in air, they are juggling. You know, it's so great that somebody's thinking of doing this.
Why are they doing any of that crap?
Because it's the story of a man who's coming undone.
That's my whole point. I can see that they're all really doing a beautiful job with what they're doing here. I just couldn't understand why any of them were there.
I mean, ultimately, I found myself at the end of the movie saying, what was real and what wasn't? Mm-hmm. And was any of this real? Or was this all in his mind? Or was this, you know, clearly the movie is from a point of view. And again, I don't want to give anything away, but that's the beauty of the movie. And I think we said the same things about Black Swan, because again, that's about an unraveling.
Right.
And there are some crazy things that happen in Black Swan, but we accepted them. Except because that was based in the reality of Swan Lake.
No, but with that movie, there is a progression, right? You start off in a world that kind of makes sense. And then you move progressively through the movie. You can take the journey with the character. Here we started off in Crazy Town.
I think this one might need a wrangle. I think we should wrangle a Birdman. Something to do with Birdman. We'll set up a trash can.
That's
right. Is it pretentious fluff or is it one of the best movies of the year?
Well, I'm clearly in the minority here. This movie is doing extremely well critically. 93% on the tomatometer, and the reviews are, you know, everyone sees something in this movie that I obviously didn't, so I'm not going to, you know, be too hard on it from that perspective. But
yeah, the commercial success of Black Swan was such an anomaly because it's such a difficult movie to process and sell. And I think this movie, I fear that it's again going to be a very difficult movie to sell. And I'm afraid it might get labeled as too freakish or too weird or too whatever.
Pretentious.
Too pretentious. Yeah. And people won't... I think if you love cinema, if you love the idea of cinema, you should see it. Yeah.
For a cinephile, this is everything you want to see. It's something new. It's something that I think advances the art in a way that you haven't seen before. But could I sit around and tell my work colleagues, go see this movie? I think they would all hate me for it.
Really?
I don't know that anyone other than my boss, who is a little bit of a cinephile, would get anything out of this. I think they would all be annoyed that I recommended this to them. This is one of those movies that I would be very careful telling everyone go see, because so a lot of people are going to react the way I did.
If you don't like the story, just the acting from Keaton, Emma Stone, and Ed Norton is worth the watch. And then all of that supporting cast.
Ed Norton hasn't been this deliciously slippery. He's so slippery in this movie. Oh, my God.
It's such a sliding scale.
It's such a slippery character. I loved
it. I loved him.
Right. All right. Let's shut up about Birdman. 25 minutes in. Let's move on.
So there's one more.
I think Joe just pooped over that one.
I did, yes. Let's move into our second movie of the week, which is John Wick.
So David Leitch was famously one of the stuntmen in all of the Matrix movies, which were made now more than 10, 15 years ago. And when he, along with Chad Stahelski, decided to make his directorial debut, they recruited their star from the Matrix movies. Their muse, which was Keanu Reeves. And this is the first movie from these two individuals. And John Wick... is the title character, played by Keanu Reeves, essentially is a man who is mourning the death of his wife, and through a series of circumstances entirely outside his control, he's set on a path of vengeance when he gets involved with a series of Russian mobsters, and the rest of the movie plays out as an action thriller. The movie stars, apart from Keanu Reeves, stars Michael Nyquist, Adriana Palicki, Willem Dafoe, as well as Dean Winters. What do you guys think about it? I think Keanu Reeves is a vampire. I think he is. He doesn't seem to age at all. No. He looks now like how he did, you know, when he made Speed. Something's up with that. He must drink the blood of decapitated goats or something. Anyway, carry on.
Or maybe he's just really a computer image.
Yes.
Okay, so first off, I'm starting to have such irritation with movies that start either halfway through or right at the end and then take us all the way back to get us to that end point. Yeah. I'm getting
tired of that.
It's been done again and again and again. That coupled with the fact that this movie really wouldn't exist if it wasn't for one chance thing that happens at the beginning really had me scratching my head. I didn't love this movie, but it was good. But it felt like the US version of The Raid mixed with Kill Bill, Pulp Fiction at times. And with all of those, you know, once again, one against many fights. And then other stuff going on. It had enough to keep my attention. And it all seemed to work out. I didn't love it. It was okay.
Yeah, this movie, for me, you mentioned Kill Bill. It's an exact copy of Kill Bill. I mean, it's a revenge thriller. It starts with the end. It starts with, you know, the main character in a situation where, you know, he's dying, just like Uma Thurman's character in Kill Bill. But on the other hand, you know, as a reasonably effective action thriller, it worked really quite nicely for me. I mean, I think narratively it wasn't very clever, but I really enjoyed the action choreography. I mean, it was brutally violent, and there were some things in this movie that I haven't seen choreographed in fight scenes and combat scenes before. There was a lot of close quarter pistol combat, and I haven't seen that done. I mean, this movie was really quite innovative in the way that, you know, the bad guys were dispatched. So, you know, in many ways, it was just like an extended version of the Matrix lobby scene. You know, fun and guns and explosions and, you know, bad guys being dispatched and a super tough lead protagonist. And, you know, if you go in with that expectation, I think you'll come out satisfied.
Yeah, I just found the movie very sleek and very stylish, like those other movies we talked about. And these days when a lot of these action movies kind of phone it in, I really like the visual look of the movie. There's a burnished look through most of the movie. It really is visually very, very, very pleasing to watch. And I guess there's nothing exceptional about the movie, but I guess the highest compliment I can give is it kind of reminded me of those kinds of 80s action thrillers like Die Hard even. You know, and its structure about, you know, this one man army who kind of is almost indestructible and goes against the bad guys, you know, and so it's completely preposterous, but somehow I don't know, I this movie should have offended me a lot, but it didn't offend me. I actually had fun with it.
Yeah, I had the same reaction. It didn't offend me as the end it should have. I just thought it was really comical when it shouldn't have been.
Right.
So there are these couple of things. Okay, so a lot of the movie is so cliche, like the Russian gangsters.
Oh, I'm tired of the Russian guy. I said this with the drop. I said, I'm sick of Russian mobsters. Yeah. Can we have any other kind?
The henchmen, right. The disco, the spoilt bratish son.
Of the henchmen.
But there was one thing I really loved, that there's a hotel for hitmen.
Yes.
And this whole underground structure within New York that exists. You know, I'm not going to be going on Travelocity and booking a room there. But how cool that there's a whole hotel for hitmen and a whole code of ethics that goes on there, right?
I love that these... Oh, please finish what you're saying.
No, I love that. And I think the thing that I found myself thinking was, there's a huge body count in this movie, Joe, as you were saying. And that I got into thinking about the philosophy of henchmen. And really, I came up with the fact, you know, and I think this is nothing that nobody already knows, but, you know, the higher the pecking order of the henchman, the more difficult it is to kill him. And the worse the death is going to be for him. But he's going to die.
It's the video game, isn't
it? It's the video game, yeah. Totally.
It's the leveling up, and they're fighting through progressively more difficult until you get to the boss level.
And I agree with you, Yazzie. There was something very stylish about this movie, right down to the way the subtitles are shown, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Beautiful subtitles. Very, very smart. Yeah. The only thing that really bothered me, more than, you know, these kind of silly things that distracted me, was there was kind of like a heavy rock death metal type soundtrack.
The whole time.
Which was really disturbing.
It's incessant, I wrote.
It was so weird. It was really weird. It was really jarring
to me. And it was playing through these fight scenes constantly. Yeah.
But it was fun. I mean, it was a fun movie.
This movie was, for me, it was very much like those graphic novels that you read, right? You've got this extremely well choreographed killing machine that's going through these things, and there are some lovely comical moments in the movies that are intentionally comical, where you have there's something so undeniably cool about the fact that when people realize, oh, it's John Wick, you know, all this carnage around them suddenly seems absolutely normal, right?
Right.
That's a wonderfully used gimmick in the movie, and they use it several different times, and each time it happened it made me really smile, because you know, there's mayhem and bullets and death and destruction. And, you know, as soon as they're like, hey, oh, John Wick, of course. Love that. What a lovely little touch. And I think that those kind of darkly comical moments are what made this movie bearable. Because I think you're right. Had it been, you know, too serious, the superhero guy, whatever it is, out for revenge, it would have become horribly cliche. But those little touches, and Keanu's such a great guy to play this type of role, because he does still, no matter what he's done since Bill and Ted, he still has that kind of
that wooden. I don't care. I'm above all this. You know.
Yeah. So
he doesn't raise his voice.
He always seems slightly detached from slightly what's going above on it around all, right. him, despite the fact that in this moment he's the one, you know, brandishing all of this, you know, weaponry and destruction. So, you know, for me, those kind of moments work, and I really have a good time when a movie doesn't take itself overly seriously in this type of environment. Because again, we've seen this hundreds of times before. This is not a new concept. This movie, nothing new.
I mean, this is almost great, like Terminator meets Raid.
Kind of. I mean, a great example of what you said, where this does not work, is a movie we did not discuss on our podcast, but it came out recently. It was called The Equalizer with Denzel Washington. Pretty much the same story about this guy who is mythic and nobody can kill him. And, you know, the end of that movie could have been called, you know, 10 million ways to kill in the Home Depot, because the last half hour is set in the Home Depot. Did you watch it?
No, we missed that one.
The last half hour is set in the Home Depot, where like this army of people are trying to get at him, and he's using everything which is in the aisles to kind of defend him and kill them in horrible, gruesome ways. But that movie came off so labored, and it was trying so hard, and it was so serious, and he had a dead wife too, and he had all this baggage. But this movie had a lightness. There was some humor about it. There was a lightness of touch about it. And the touch I like more than anything else, I love that hotel in New York where all the hitmen come. But the touch I liked even more than that is there was this whole separate currency amongst these criminals. These coins, which meant a lot, and these coins were very valuable. And if you did something, you would exchange a coin with the other person. So these criminals had their own exalted currency. And that's cool. That's smart.
It's really cool. It was very cool. It was very stylish. I mean, but This just isn't what it says on the label.
No,
I mean that's what I'm trying to get across, right? This is not too many steps up from Austin Powers.
Oh no,
it's a very different sensibility.
What I'm saying is, but when you think about sharks swimming around with a bomb on their head,
right.
That's not so different to, you know, the man who you hire to kill the boogeyman. Mm-hmm. You know, John Wick.
The boogeyman, right?
The boogeyman killer. You know, so what I'm saying is it's just a very serious packaging of a really ridiculous concept.
Yeah, it's like the ultimate badassness. I mean,
there's this whole scene set in a nightclub where there's literally hundreds of people and it opens up into full out carnage. And it's like a 15-minute scene, but nothing happens to John Wick. There's hundreds of people with guns trying to shoot him.
But he does get hurt. I mean, I do like the fact that he gets hurt.
Yeah, after 15 minutes.
Yeah, but that's really funny, okay? Because there's a whole scene where there is literally a machine gun war in the middle of New York and no police comes.
Of course.
Which I found very interesting.
No police ever come in these movies, yeah.
You know.
Right, I mean, but that's exactly what I'm saying. I mean, this movie kind of has fun with that whole idea. I mean, for me, you know, that scene, if you want to nitpick at, you know, what the movie's trying to be and what it's not trying to be, he kills so many people with headshots. And yet, here he is. He's got bulletproof vest and all that armor, but nobody takes a pot shot at his head.
That's what I mean.
You know, and so, you know, but again, ordinarily that would be kind of annoying, but it's so damn stylishly done and cool.
And I think that's the reason, the stylishness is the only other reason why I let this movie off when I wouldn't others, which are equally violent. This is a very violent movie, but it's how stylishly it's done that it doesn't seem quite as...
a nice residence with glass walls, it doesn't seem... And contemporary furniture, that makes it all right.
No, somehow the violence doesn't seem pornographic. It seems kind of action movie-ish. It's
pleasing to the eye. It's not a bad way to watch a man who does bad things die in a nice... place.
Yeah, the stunt choreography, I think, is what augments this movie above anything else. Because again, I think what stopped me getting bored through scene after scene after scene of basically the same narrative. Every scene starts
next
with
level up,
John
right,
Wick
right.
enters scene. Hell, all hell breaks loose. Right. John Wick walks away from a pile of bodies, and you know every single scene in the movie is effectively done that way. It's just how and like you mentioned the Raid Rashmi. Just how innovative everyone is dispatched, because no guy seems to die in exactly the same way. They get taken out in, and it's so imaginative, and the way that, you know, he'll grab somebody and like shoot them point blank in the head, and then at the same time there'll be another guy flying over a wall at him where his gun is automatically pointing backwards, and you know, shoots at just the right time, like he has his sixth sense. It's just wonderfully done. It's just so wonderfully done.
And I think we saw some of that good stunting in the house. So recall when John Wick is in his own house and there's a raid on his house. There's a lot of that using them against themselves, which I thought was raid-like, which is why I made the reference.
I mean, his whole motivation for going on this revenge, it's so silly. I mean, at some point I was like, just get over it. So they killed your dog, you know, just get over it. Get over it. You know, he kills hundreds of people. He kills hundreds of people.
My friend.
He kills hundreds of people. I'm like,
because. That is the cutest damn dog.
That was the cutest dog in any movie ever.
I have not seen a four-legged friend depicted in a way that was so lovingly.
That was a cute dog. That was the cutest dog.
Holy,
take your words back.
Okay, I take my words back. That dog's life shall be avenged.
I don't think it was.
I would nuke an entire country if somebody had killed my dog
too.
Like that.
I would too. I don't think. See, I didn't take it as the dog. I just took it. That whole chance meeting is what sets off the...
Right.
What's the inciting incident in this movie, which...
And it just pisses him off,
so
right?
So really, I found myself thinking, well, if he wasn't at that gas station at that moment in time, none of this would have happened. We wouldn't have a movie.
I think it also has a really good lead villain, played by Michael Nyquist, who played the Daniel Craig character in the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo adaptation.
He's a good baddie.
He's a very good baddie.
Yeah.
You know, worth fighting for.
Yeah. Okay, let's sum this one up. So Yasi, you go first.
I really enjoyed like the fine, burnished, controlled, understated kind of tone of the first act of the movie. And then all hell broke loose where just hundreds were being decimated. I did get a little tired with the incessant carnage. But, you know, this is really a very sleek, stylish, fun action thriller. And the very fact that I'm, you know, I said earlier that it reminds me of Die Hard is the highest praise I can give to it. 7 out of 10 seems slightly undernourished. I would maybe 7.5, but I'll back to 7 out of 10.
Joe.
If you like the action scenes in any of the movies that we mentioned, you know, The Raid, The Matrix, you know, even there was a movie a year ago, Two Guns, Denzel and Woody Harrelson, I think, where, you know, again, it was very stylishly done combat scenes. If you like that kind of thing, then this movie is for you. And this movie's done very well critically, amazingly well. For a movie that narratively is as simple as it is. I mean,
yeah, I'm shocked.
You know, it's but it's because it's so well executed.
Yeah.
This movie looks delicious and I think its running time is appropriate. And so, you know, for a Friday night choice, you're not gonna come out of this movie feeling annoyed. Even if this isn't your cup of tea, you'll be impressed by what you've seen. And so for that, it's gonna get maybe an 8's a little too generous, but I'm going to stick with it. 8 out of 10.
Too many henchmen die in this movie, and I actually want to watch the movie again because I actually want to spend the time doing a final body count. But that aside,
643.
Yeah, I just want to know, like, if there's someone at the studios who I can write to, just to say what was the final body count. I'm really interested in that. But, you know, I think this is a modern film noir type of movie. It's very watchable. It's nice to see Keanu Reeves again, whose acting has only marginally improved. But it's fun to watch him kick ass and in a nice black suit.
Number?
You know, 6 or 7. I'll give it a 7.
I don't know where you got film noir from.
Because it's kind of like that dark, you know, gangster, Sin City-esque. It's like an underbelly world.
But it's nowhere near The Drop, for example.
No, of course not. No, I mean, it's not. No, because it's not even this. I mean, this is diabolical. I mean, that was amazing. This is diabolical.
Right.
But it's really fun. Yeah, it shouldn't work. It shouldn't work, but it does. It's like serious Austin Powers. I think that's why I liked it.
I think that's underselling it a little bit. No?
Love Austin Powers.
Do you?
Love.
So John Wick gets our movie of the week. Forget about Birdman, then.
No! Well, wouldn't it be a great two-parter? You know, go watch both of them. One is a more traditional, fun movie. The other one will blow your mind. One way or the other.
It's that time of year. I feel like every week when we do podcasts, I keep saying, oh, I've met my favorite movie of the year. Like every movie I'm watching.
You have to stop doing that.
Because I'm telling you, I am loving these recent movies. There are some really, really amazing movies coming. And I keep trying in my head to even say like, oh, I gave this one a 7. Is this the same 7? Or is it more? You know, I love The Drop. I'm just giving a plug for The Drop again, which I gave a 9. And I was thinking, well, I just gave Birdman 10. So is that valid? Yes, absolutely. The Drop is an incredible movie, but Birdman is something different.
Yes, I would agree with you on that.
Thank you, Yasin. I'll make Joe watch Holy Motors again because that might prep him again.
I'll watch Whiplash again if you watch Birdman again. How's that?
You're going to watch which one?
Whiplash.
Oh.
Honestly, I would...
Sooner gorge your eye out with a rusted fork.
Yeah, I'd rather drink that bottle of perfume over there. I mean, there's okay. No way I want to sit through Birdman again. Okay, so mail at movierollers.com. Let us know what you think of these movies. Let us know what you think of our podcast. Any feedback would be great. We'd love to hear from you, so do get in touch with us that way. Twitter.com/movierollers and Facebook.com/movierollers as well. Don't forget, we have partnered with our good friends over at wrangle.com, RANGL.com. So they have a specific section on their website dedicated to movie-related...
pop culture.
pop culture, but also also movie wrangle. So set up a wrangle yourself. Why don't you go out there and if you've got a question that you want to debate with the world, do that on wrangle.com. Again, RANGL.com. And we thank them for their collaboration with Movie Wallers. Until our next episode, it's too many movies and too little time. Hey, good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.
Tweet, tweet.